I think it's pretty clear right now that the biggest effect on future work is going to be around AI and how that's going to impact it. How will that impact jobs? What jobs might that take away? What jobs might they make better because of that? I don't think we have the answers to all that yet, but I guarantee you every company in the future workspace is thinking about that if they're not already trying things. And it seems clear, at least at this state, that that is unquestionably going to be the biggest impact on what work looks like and how people work, for sure.
Hello. Today, I will speak with Matt Hoffman. Matt is a highly accomplished entrepreneur and venture capitalist, known for his expertise in building and scaling businesses. With a keen eye of emerging trends and disruptive technologies, Matt has established himself as a leading figure in the startup ecosystem. With a passion for supporting the next generation of founders, Matt actively contributes to the entrepreneurial community. He frequently speaks at industry events and serves as the mentor to aspiring entrepreneurs, sharing his knowledge and expertise to help others succeed. Today, we will speak about how to prepare to the future of work, what would leaders need to do differently in order to thrive in the new imagined workplaces, and much more. So stay with us. Matt, thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
I love to start with a personal question. I will ask you if you can share something that someone said that changed your perspective, viewpoint, or how you approach life.
Yeah, so it's a great question. You know, what I thought of when you asked the question is, let's say this was probably about 10, 11, 12 years ago, is when I first started working in kind of startups, which is kind of the world that I'm in now. You know, I'd been working at bigger companies before, and, you know, there are things I knew and there were things I was good at, but you know, you'll maybe see this during the session. If not, you'll have to take my word for it that I've got kind of a bit of an unusual style. Sometimes I can be a little bit quirky. I think that's helpful overall because it gives me like different perspectives, which is really, really important in startups and VC. But, you know, sometimes it can show up in different ways. And this was early on in my career. I've obviously hopefully gotten a little bit more kind of professional around it. And I was talking to my boss, who himself is one of the best DHOs and CPOs out there, and certainly the best one I know. And we were talking about the feedback, which is helpful. And he was like, some people are saying this. And he's like, my perspective is, I don't actually care if you do this. Instead of trying to kind of modulate what everyone wants you to be, where your strengths are not, really focus on doubling down on your strengths, what makes you unique. And that was such helpful and amazing feedback, because everyone's always like, get better at the stuff you're bad at. And obviously, you always want to kind of try to improve. But he kind of flipped it on, like, I don't care about that. Focus on what you're really good at and be even better at that. And it was an amazing, amazing perspective you know, is here. And it really kind of changed how I think about, instead of trying to kind of please everyone and be kind of this like smoothed out type of approach, I really did focus on instead what I was great at and being my kind of best self in my own particular way, which was super, super helpful.
Amazing story. You know, it's connected also today to the appreciative inquiry, seeing what makes us alive, what's good in us, and moving forward with this positivity in order to try change things that we're less good at. So I love the story.
Yeah. Don't try to be like everyone else. Be unique and be what your best version of yourself is.
And sure, nobody can bring what you're present to the world, right?
You're right.
Present. So if you really polish your present, this will be the most beautiful. If you bring, I love it. I want to ask you about the future of work. You know, what do you think major disruption do you anticipate for employers in the next 5 years? And how do you think this disruption will impact the workforce?
Yeah, it's certainly a question that me and my team spend the most of our time thinking about. You know, I think if you asked the question about 6 months or a year ago, everyone would say kind of hybrid work is the big disruption. And I still think that's the case. I know there's kind of this big push to get everyone back in the office. But my sense is that's more about kind of power dynamics and, you know, finding ways to do soft layoffs more than anything else. I do think that kind of change is inexorable. And as technology gets better and as we start to see things in kind of the VR and AR space and just given living patterns and climate patterns, there's just an incredible desire to kind of have some flexibility in work. Like humans love that flexibility. They love the autonomy. People do not like being told what to do. And there's a real recognition that like there's better ways of working that give more flexibility. You know, when I work near the city, but I don't work in the city. And when I come in the city, it's an hour and a half for me each way, twice as much, right, for each day. And I have a pretty good commute for the New York City metro area. And I'm just much more productive when I have those 2 or 3 hours back. And obviously, there are times where you need to come in and make personal connections and work with people on your team or clients. But the key thing is having that flexibility for figuring out what works for you, you know, mandating it for the sake, you know, you think of kind of the carbon imprint of commuting and things like that. I just think the trend is going to continue to be towards hybrid as much as people might wish that was not the case. I think it's really, really hard. And I think it's a good thing. So I think that's one really big thing. But, you know, you're asking me today, and I think it's pretty clear right now that the biggest impact on future work is going to be around AI and how that's going to impact it. How will that impact jobs? What jobs might that take away? What jobs might they make better because of that? I don't think we have the answers to all that yet, but I guarantee you every company in the future of workspace is thinking about that if they're not already trying things. And it seems clear, at least at this state, that that is unquestionably going to be the biggest impact on what work looks like and how people work, for sure.
Do you think leaders can get ready for this? What do you think they can
do? You got to get ready for it, right? I don't think we know all the answers, but I do think you have to start thinking about the questions. You know, based on kind of the early stage of what you see, there are some things that AI is actually really good at. There's something it's actually really not good at. What it's really good at is kind of taking really complex kind of research questions and distilling it down. So what we're seeing is companies that use AI as like a co-pilot to help humans make better decisions and take that complexity and put it in. What it's really not good at are things around creativity, innovation, empathy, right? So the idea is that AI can provide a structure for the human work of building relationships and creating empathy and actually take away some of that work and give like frameworks. So it's really good like that. In that way, it's almost similar to kind of what I was just saying about hybrid or remote work is that, you know, working remotely is fine when you're doing like individual kind of heads down work. It's actually better for that. It doesn't replace the ability to kind of create meaningful connections just yet. And I think that's the same thing with AI. It can take out a lot of the monotony of some of the process and create really good structured framework, but it's not going to be able to create that empathy and relationship that you'd want. I expect everything will get much better and much more technology complex, but that seems to be kind of where things are headed out. So it'll be really interesting to see how that impacts some jobs, what new jobs will be created, and what jobs might be disrupted or displaced because of that.
You talked about the hybrid workplace, and I must say that I'm also surprised because I see that a lot of leaders and CEOs, managers want the people to come back to work in the physical place. You know, it amazes me because I see it as kind of the future, kind of the transformation that we're going through. But as human beings, we don't like change, right? So we don't want people to move our cheese, right? So they want them to come to the office.
I think that's right.
Right, but it won't happen. I don't believe
it's a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I think you're kind of spot on. I mean, it's been pretty clear that over the past couple of years, there's been a significant amount of growth and productivity with everyone working from home. And I think you have to recognize and acknowledge that. And at the same time, I think you're spot on. Like, leaders don't like change. There's power dynamics in terms of I want to see people where I can control them. It is also true that being together in person helps build better relationships and things like that. But that doesn't mean that it works for everyone every time. There has to be some flexibility and accommodations. You know, most corporations do not have the bulk of their workforce in one physical location, right? So they have to figure out how to work remotely, even if they're in the office. So it can't just be about the sitting down next to someone and whiteboarding, because that just does not hold up with organizations that are more than one location. And so I think there are other things going on. And, you know, there's been some great articles about it around some of the power dynamics and things like that. And just aversion to change, right? And you can certainly do that in a market where employees don't have as much leverage as they might have a couple of years ago. There are definitely things that cannot be replicated remotely in the office. And when I work with remote companies, we just be really intentional about finding ways to create those times for personal connection, relationship building. I think it's very hard if everyone is always separated all the time, but they don't always need to be together on a set schedule either. Find times for when the work that needs to be done for team building, offsites collaboration. If you save money on having a smaller office footprint, you know, redeploy that money on more travel. Have them get together when they need to be. Pick a time and a place where they can be together and focus on that. But it doesn't have to be all the time. You don't need to kind of have every single person in the office. It's expensive. It's not great for the environment. All those type of things is not great for people's personal life and ability to recharge and energize. You can actually get everything you need, in my mind, with a really thoughtful, intentional hybrid schedule. And that's generally what I encourage companies I work with to do.
So you're actually talking, I agree with you that the advance of the AI will make things more efficient, but at the other end, it can change the creative and innovative part that we as human beings need to bring, right? I think, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think AI can't mimic emotions right now, right? They don't have this.
No, and in fact, there's some actually interesting kind of stories coming out about companies that are trying to use AI to cover really sensitive things, whether it's healthcare or I think there was something around kind of mental health crisis lines or things like that, or caregiving. It cannot do that. In fact, it's actually quite dangerous and they've actually seen really negative outcomes. So as of yet, it can't. And so you really have to figure out how can AI make the humans who can do that better, but not replace them completely.
So I think it's important to understand how we can enable more creativity, you know, especially in the startup realm, that people need to take their startup to be creative, right, in the cutting edge to differentiate them from another startup. So how can we increase this creativity among employees and in the hybrid work? So you started talking about putting structures in place, inviting all the employees at the same day to connect and collaborate. But what more thought I'd like to
put it's such a good question. When you think about AI and some of the creative endeavors, the writing, you know, on ChatGPT, the artistic stuff on Midjourney, like they actually create some aesthetically beautiful things. But if you think about it, all it is kind of being trained on actual human creativity and then replicating it and taking it. It doesn't often kind of create that next step, at least yet, right? So you actually need that human input for it to learn in the model on. And if you completely eliminate anything that's created by humans going forward, it'll never have anything new to learn on, right? So I think the real innovation will still come from the humans. I think the AI and the GPT will make things easier to do that. So one is you actually create intentional space for humans to have that interaction, that kind of brainstorming, whiteboarding, where the creativity comes. And, you know, look, sometimes it comes at the gym, sometimes it comes in the shower, so it does for kind of me. But, you know, you need that kind of spark to bounce it off of. So you create opportunities for that. But you don't hold yourself entirely within an ecosystem that's AI or GPT created, because you won't actually have that innovation. You actually have to create space for humans to break out of that. And that's really what companies should be thinking about, is how can we create humans space to go beyond what their current potential is, or at least reach their current potential, rather than being restrained by AI just for the sake of efficiency. You certainly want to have a balance of efficiency and productivity. But if you really want to create that new disruption, if you really want to create the new game changer, you have to find the space for humans to do that. And that's what a lot of leaders, that's what a lot of CHROs are thinking about, is how do you balance those two things together?
I know that you work with a lot of CEOs and entrepreneurs. Can you give us an example of main struggles and how they overcome them in order to really lead the company to the path that they want?
Sure. Are you talking about like any AI space versus human, or just thinking about kind of like creating that potential in general?
Whatever comes to your mind, we can let go of the AI and, you know, talk about the challenges of leader nowadays in this ecosystem. And
yeah,
AI is part of them, is a crucial one, but I think there are more, for my experience, much more.
Yeah, you know, it's super interesting. Obviously, in this type of market, especially with the early stage kind of pre-IPO companies that I work with at M13, our venture capital fund, there's been a big pause around kind of growth at all costs, and much more about like being really thoughtful about how you spend, right? And sometimes that comes with slowing down growth. Sometimes it comes with kind of reducing the size of headcount, which is always hard. And it's a very different mentality for employers to take when they can't just kind of grow. And it's not just all about making things as good and big as they could possibly be. And at times that can be scary for employees. At times that can be demoralizing for employees. You never want employees to kind of work out of fear. You never get your best work out of employees under fear. And if people think that they're going to lose their jobs, there's going to be a fear base in there. That's another example like we talked about. When people are scared of stuff, they're not going to be creative. They're not going to be innovation. They're kind of lizard brain takes over and they're all about kind of protecting themselves, right? They're not going to want to share their best with others because they're worried, well, if there's two people and one's going to get fired, I'd rather be that guy. So I'm not going to share my best with them. I'm going to kind of protect myself. So you never want people working out of fear. So even in kind of slower growth, reduced growth environments, really great leaders find the time to create connection with their employees, to make sure that they feel safe, to make sure that they feel like they have the space to be innovative. So when I work with leaders, I make sure now's the time we actually need to over-communicate. You need to talk about what's going on now, why it's going on now, what it means for you specifically as the employee, how things are going to go forward. And you want to give people that certainty as much as you can have any certainty in the world, but as much as you can about what the path going forward is. Talk about individual growth, talk about personal growth and development, talk about company growth and development, how those things kind of stay together. And giving that path, creating that engagement between what people need as human beings and what the company needs to be successful as a business, that is a way to energize them, create that growth, help them move forward in a way that feels safe and lets them do the best work and take those appropriate risks to help the company come up with new ideas and move forward. And it's a balancing act, but you know, sometimes, you know, anyone can be a good leader when everything is up and to the right in the world. But the best leaders in scary times find ways to kind of be thoughtful, be responsible, but also create that connection with their employees to help them do their best work. Sometimes it's a lot harder, but that's where the best leaders kind of shine and come through.
I couldn't agree more. This is about leading mindfully, the ability to be present and really listen to what our employee needs, our customers, the changing needs of the market, and to be also agile, right? To be able to pivot and change and not to be attached to or in love with our product because maybe it's not a good fit anymore.
Yeah. You should love your product, but you should recognize that, like, just because it was lovable, you know, a year ago doesn't mean it's lovable now, right? And always be open to what needs to be better, what's going to change. And that creates a real, to your point, an empathetic mindset, really being open to hearing what people on your team have to say and recognizing that things are going to change, right? The best leaders don't protect their employees completely from change. They take them along on the journey as partners. And that's how you get that change. You can't just say everything is perfect. We're going to huddle up, bunker down. You've got to embrace that change, but do it in a way where it feels like everyone is going on that journey together.
It's really a needed skill. You know, we talk about it a lot, being vulnerable, authentic, and authenticity, and creating trust. I really believe the trust is the new glue for leading nowadays because it's not hierarchical relationships anymore. But, you know, being in the field and working with the CEOs, the beginning of the companies, during the journey, how much do you see people really being able to be authentic and to show up fully and to how much it's challenging for them? Because it's really nice in theory, but you know, it's really scary to do it.
It's hard. And it's really hard in this political environment and this social environment, right? For lots of reasons, which we kind of don't need to get into. But there is a real lack of trust between leaders and employees. And I think that's even more the case now, right? I think it's harder to have that trust when employees feel like there's going to continue to be layoffs. I think it's really hard for them to trust their bosses. Clearly, there's a lack of trust that we talked about. I think that's related to some of the kind of being in the office. And I think some of that is going away. Mm-hmm. I think there were a lot of times where employees didn't have that level of loyalty when things are good to employers. And so employers like, why should I have that level of loyalty to my employees? So there's all sorts of reasons, structural, social, political, economic, why that trust isn't there as much. And it kind of makes sense, right? Like nobody works at the same company anymore. You know, the average 10-year company is probably like 2 to 3 years, at least in kind of early stage startups. So I get it all. I get there's lots of reasons why you won't kind of have that blind loyalty. And it makes sense to do that, obviously. But I do think the best companies have some level of understanding where there's a combination of the recognition of the economic marketplace where no one can ever be guaranteed full employment or guaranteed employment for life, right? But at the same time, like feeling like within the context of the world might change, do you trust your leader to make the right decision? Do you trust your leader to share transparently what's going on and to operate from, you know, a set of principles, right? So even if business changes and you have to make hard decisions, do you trust that your leader is going to do it in a fair and equitable way, in a transparent way? Do you trust it to be some sort of transition to help you move on to whatever's next? I don't think that's unreasonable to ask as leaders. And at the same time, can leaders trust their employees to kind of share what's going on in their mind, to be their authentic self? Sometimes they don't want to do that. Sometimes people feel like they can't because it's not recognized. And, you know, that actually goes to that earlier question that we first talked about is like, if someone has a little different approach, is that appreciated and celebrated because we want a diversity of approach, or do we want everyone to be the same, in which case people are not going to show their authentic self? So as you can probably tell, I think on both sides, when you can create an atmosphere of safety and trust, people can do their best work. I do think it kind of goes in both directions. You need to give people responsibility and trust that they will use it. And if people demonstrate that they can't be responsible, that's when you kind of pull the string a little bit and things get a little bit tighter. But in cases where there is that trust, I've seen companies in really hard economic environments do amazing, amazing things.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. You need to create this space culture that people will show up. And there is the creativity and innovation. Otherwise, people holding back and not bringing themselves.
Yeah. And there are toolkits and processes to do that. There are ways that employees can connect with leaders. There are ways that leaders can communicate to employees. There are tools around how to get feedback effectively, how to set really interesting and challenging goals to get feedback against that, to make sure there's development plans for the individual and company and ties together. There are kind of toolkits and processes to do that. And a lot of what I do is help companies put those into place in our portfolio. But it really starts with the leader and making sure that he or she has kind of the right mindset around that growth and making sure they're supporting their team to and their business to whatever their goals are.
Can you give a listeners one or two tools or structure that they can put in place tomorrow if they want to nourish this?
Sure. I don't know, you could put in tomorrow, but you could start tomorrow and you can get better. But, you know, I really do think kind of, you know, regular candid cycles, not to get too HR boring, but regular candid cycles of goals and feedback are one of the most important things that a leader can do, right? So be really clear on expectations, be really transparent, be kind, but be candid and transparent. And this is my expectations for what I want this role or this team to accomplish. We can talk about it. I'm not just going to give you a list and say, do it. We'll talk about kind of what you think and what you think is reasonable. And we'll have some level of negotiation around that. Although obviously the leaders need to kind of make that decision ultimately. But really clear set of goals that let people stretch and prioritize their work. Super, super important. You've got to know where you're going so that you can focus your time doing that. And that's energizing, right? That helps people have a path to focus on. To get better, right? They want the business to get better. This is what I need to do. This is what I shouldn't waste my time doing. This is what I need to do. So a really good cycle of goals, step one. And then step two is give regular feedback against those goals. Don't just wait till the end of the year. Have regular check-ins. Here's what's working. Here's not. What are the blockers? What do you need from me? And these are not like revolutionary ideas. They've been around for a while, but you'd be surprised how many companies don't have cycles in place to do that. Because they think it takes too much time, or they don't have a good culture about giving candid feedback, or it's too hard, or they don't know how to do it. That's where a good HR leader can help you do that. But companies that have regular cycles of goals feedback, in my experience, get better faster. Full stop.
That's true. And, you know, I think in a paradoxical way, people don't feel, like you said, putting the energy in now conversation, small talks, then I don't have time for it, but in a paradoxical way, increases the productivity and give them more control because they really know where the employees are and they won't be surprised tomorrow morning. 100%. Right? When the employees say, okay.
And employees know where they are, right? Employees know where they sit.
Yeah. And be surprised that tomorrow morning one of the employees will tell them, okay, I had enough. Thank you. I'm moving to another company because they know that they're not satisfied in their work. So maybe they will tailor a new job for him or remove him to another group or division, right? So the productivity increase because you really know to align between the needs and abilities of the employee and the needs of the company, right? But it requires us not always to know the answer, to come open-minded, to be present, to really absorb That's what's right. happening and not be in a story that we're telling ourselves, right? And then there's a gap between the story and what's happening. And then we're surprised that people are leaving and things not going the way we want to. So as you said, I think it's crucial because it's so crucial, the communication piece, you know, we can talk, right? This is
totally.
The crucial.
And those type of developmental assignments you're talking about, that's how people get better. That's how companies be better. So at our company, we're a pretty small firm, but we are really intentional about saying, we think this person is super high potential. We'd like to talk to you about a new role. Let's plan now for getting you there in 6, 9, 12 months, whatever it is. We'll give you more experiences. We'll give you more opportunities. Then we know where the business is going. We know where you're focused on. It's great for engagement. It's great for retention. No one's going to leave if they know they're kind of like built up for something new. That's a pretty easy thing for companies to do. You just have to be willing to take the time. And yeah, sure. Like you said, it takes a few more minutes of conversation up front, but it saves so much time down the line because people know what's important. They know what to focus on. So those things are just totally invaluable in my experience.
Another thing that people not always want to hear different viewpoints or feel criticized when someone don't think them like them. And I think it requires us as leaders and managers to increase our self-awareness and be able to hear different voices and not take it personally. And create this space, right? What do you think about it?
I think it's so important what you said. You know, disagreement, respectful, healthy disagreement, right? Like respectful, healthy disagreement is so, so important to getting new ideas in there, to making people feel like they have an agency and a voice. The companies that refuse to kind of hear any kind of dissenting opinions are going to be stuck, right? They're not going to innovate. They're not going to move forward. So you need to create a culture where people are afraid to speak up. Now, one of our values, M13, is disagree and then commit, right? So we actually encourage healthy debate, but once we make a decision, we expect everyone to be on board with it. And that's, I think, the way to do it, right? We want to create a safe space where people can kind of feel comfortable speaking up and saying, I have a different point of view. You can't work in VC if you're not somewhat contrarian. Otherwise, you're never going to find these outliers. So we actually really want to encourage different points of view. But at the end of the day, we're one team and we've got to make a decision and support each other. And so how do you create that balance? Again, that's where the value of important leadership really kind of shows through.
Yes, sure. It's all in the balance. Matt, when you are looking for a startup to invest in them, which qualities are you looking for in the leaders?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're actually having a discussion right now. Obviously, we want to invest in the business that we have a potential to be completely disruptive and kind of industry leaders, right? At our size, you want it to be able to have an exit of, you know, multiple billions of dollars, hopefully, in order to kind of make the math work, which is pretty rare, right? And so what does that mean? Obviously, it needs to be a disruptive business. Obviously, it needs to be an important market. Those things are somewhat quantifiable. Really, what you're betting on is the leadership team's ability to execute in that space. So what are the things we look for? Obviously, you look for kind of intelligence and creativity. I think that goes without saying, because you need to kind of see things that others don't. We look for a relentlessness around how they execute. Do they give up at the first sight of hardship, or do they kind of continue to work through it? Because, you know, startups are a marathon, right? Like the average kind of time from inception to exit is somewhere between 7 or 10 years. It's not going to be smooth sailing remotely along the way. So you've got to be kind of resilient and relentless how you go through. We look for their ability to kind of lead and inspire teams. What we've been talking about for the past, you know, half hour or so is, can they hire people, great people, people who are better than them? Can they inspire them? Can they motivate them? Can they get them working together? Can they organize them? Because there's so much going on. So we look for that sense of engagement, their ability to focus, that inspirational leadership is really, really critical. I think those are some of the things. You know, it's pretty rare that the exact company you invest in at Series Seed or Series A, where we invest, it's going to be the exact same business, you know, 6, 7, 8 years down the line. There's going to be some changes. So you can't just invest in the business. You really have to invest in the team. And so those are the things that we are starting to look at and focus on. So where is our differential? Where can we really kind of predict who's going to have those qualities in a really tough road down the line? And obviously, you know, our job as investors and operators is to help them get better along the way, either with advisory help or coaching help or tactical help. Really, you need to find leaders that are willing to work and grow and develop in that way too.
Great. Matt, before we need to wrap up, is there any question that I didn't ask you and you want me to answer?
I think you covered the big ones. I get mostly around kind of future work AI, what leaders are. I think the really key thing to remember is, you know, it's never one size fits all. So I have my version of best practices. Other people have theirs. None of us are totally right. Like different companies need different things. Different people need different things. There's different environments. There's different personalities types. You know, it's really easy as VCs or investors can say, like, here's the playbook. And, you know, these generally work and we think they're good practices, but it's not one size fits all. So really taking the time to understand as a leader, as a business, what are your strengths? What are your development areas? What works for you? Get really curious about that. Get really honest about that. And in figuring out ways to take this kind of one single approach and bend it a little bit, break it a little bit where it needs to be for this company and move forward. Because again, the best companies are doing things that's never been done before. And so it's never going to be a website that's all around that.
I love it. Thank you. Matt, if people, listeners want to reach out, where can they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, obviously. You can contact me through our M13 homepage at m13.co. Send a note out to me. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. You can contact me directly at the website. I really do hope to hear from as many people as possible because I always love having these conversations.
Thank you very much for your time and wisdom.
Thanks so much. Take care, Karen.
Hope you enjoyed the conversation. You're invited to subscribe to our podcast in order to know when we upload a new episode and follow us on social media. Thank you for listening. Until next time, take care and bye-bye.